When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bub in the Bloom, episode 30, our second episode of the week, talking baseball HQ Forecaster. Really looking forward to another one. The first one was pretty darn awesome with Corbin and Jock. We got three HQers on today to talk about their written work, their essay work in the Forecaster. We're going to space it out. They each get about 20 to 25 minutes or so, give or take, where the conversation goes. And we're going to talk about their articles and much, much more. But before we get there, I'm on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan, how are we doing, my friend?
We're hanging in there. It's been a day in real life. The local schools are closed, so daycare is closed, and we're making do here. And of course, podcast is high priority. Yep. up there with kids. So we're able to do the show, and I'm excited, man. Yeah, last show was awesome. Corbin and Jock were excellent. The bar has been set high. I think we'll clear it. We'll clear it today. So I like these two shows in 1 week. We got a nice flow going.
I love this show. Before I introduce our first guest in like 2 seconds here, I love this one especially because most people look at any draft guide in theory, let alone the Forecaster, to look at players, player analysis. That's what they look for. So the boxes. But what's cool about the Forecaster, we kind of talked about in the last one, Ryan, about the encyclopedia at the front and whatnot. And there's these essays from very, very qualified writers, some with HQ, some contributing outside. So this podcast will be about three of the writers who wrote essays. And one of the writers, of course, who we're going to introduce right now, did some player pages and boxes as well, which is cool. But he wrote a really, really good essay we're going to talk about called The Benefits of Structured Drafting in Rotisserie Leagues. You can find him on Twitter at _DanMarcus. Daniel Marcus, how are we doing, my man?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk baseball.
Yeah, this is going to be a blast. It's fun to see, like I said, the written content in there. It's like an extra plus to a lot of, I feel bad saying draft guy. It's not a draft guy, but people know what I'm trying to say when it's your preseason draft prep book. So it's fun to see that written content. So before we dive into this, I know you do some other written content as well. How'd the last season go for you writing-wise? What did you like gain out of it? And what fun took place in 2022 for you?
Yeah, writing-wise, it was busy. I do some work at RotoWire as well. So between the two, Baseball HQ and RotoWire, I was busy. Did a lot of work at Baseball HQ specifically. I do two playing time tomorrow, two divisions of that. NL Central, I'm a Pirates fan, unfortunately, so that one's easy to follow for me. And then I've gotten to know the NL West equally well over the past couple of years, so that's been good. And then I also got the opportunity to start jumping into some facts and flukes columns as well, so nice. Busy times. Yep, it was a good time.
That's like the old Bloomfield path. I had I think up until like 5 years ago I had the NL West playing time tomorrow, and then I moved to facts and flukes. I never did two divisions at once plus facts. That's a lot, man.
Yeah, I wasn't on full time. I was rotating. I think someone might have fallen out of the rotation or something like that. So I was only doing those once a month. Nice. But yeah, the two playing time columns was enough to keep me busy. So
that's where you're supposed to go, Bloomfield. I'm coming for your job, speculating.
I got a long way to go for that.
but good stuff. It's always great work over there. So it's fun to hear that you're grinding on like we all do. But the fun thing over here to talk about is your essay, The Benefits of Structured Drafting in Roto Leagues. And we don't have to give everything away. Obviously, we'll talk about pretty much all of it, but people do need to go get the Forecaster. We talk about it all the time. But kind of like, what's the idea behind this essay? What did you learn, I guess, through this essay?
Yeah, it's kind of what I learned and what I hope to do with it next. It's kind of a two-part answer. So,
perfect.
30 word in fantasy baseball circles, but I actually got the idea from fantasy football. So, you know, talking about structured drafting, it's, you know, a huge topic in fantasy football. I didn't think of it, you know, necessarily being as big in fantasy baseball, but, you know, with different kind of strategies popping up that have been a lot of preseason discussion, you know, pocket aces, closers early, speed only guys early, those types of strategies, it kind of gave me the idea of, you know, like we talk about zero RB and fantasy football, stuff like that. Does anything like that translate to fantasy baseball? So just kind of got that idea. And then, you know, tried to think of some of the strategies that people, you know, debate in fantasy baseball and tried to see, you know, what I could come up with in terms of if there is a discernible advantage and where that might come from.
Yeah, when looking at your essay, I really enjoy just even right out the gate here because you mentioned the different strategies and people talk about it a lot, you know, take pitchers early, take hitters early, certain hitters, certain pitchers, like you're talking about, different structures. And you even break down over like the last 4 years and 12 and 15 teams, just the percentages on what took place before you even dig into kind of what worked and what didn't. Because there's been a lot of really good work done showing that, hey, you need an ace or two. That's just kind of like what it's going to be. But it's not always the end all be all, because before Phil Dussault did his magical year 2 years ago, pocket aces never won an overall competition. So it's like it might do really well to win a league, but can't do the whole thing. And so you have all these different things breaking down. When you did some of your research on this, what did you find to maybe be, I guess, the best way, or maybe there's a couple that are pretty good ways to maybe start out your draft that seemed pretty successful?
Yeah. So first, I just want to it's in the article, but I do want to just start with a disclaimer kind of first of all, which is kind of what the data that I have can and cannot tell us, because I don't want people to either hear this or read it and think one thing when that's not really kind of what we have yet. So it's not like a win rate type data yet, because I only used league winners from RotoWire Online Championship Leagues and Main Event League Champions. Obviously, to get a win rate, you need to get all the teams from all those leagues.
We would need several Dan Marcuses to be able to manually do all that. Yeah.
In an ideal world, I would love to find a way to do that. I think that would be, you know, awesome. But yeah, I, you know, it takes a good amount of time just to do the league winners to map all that out. So, you know, it's still a long-term goal. I don't know if I'll ever reach it, but it is kind of something I want to do. So I just want to be clear. It's not like a win rate type thing. But someone, you know, it got published originally on Baseball HQ before drafts, 2022 drafts. And someone in the comments, people had a lot of interesting comments, and I actually mean that in a positive way. I'm not being sarcastic. I actually do mean that.
Usually the comment zone is pretty big. So yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, I actually do.
Not at HQ. We got good people.
Well, that's because they're subscribers. There's a difference.
Yeah, it's not the yeah.
I do mean that positively. You know, and someone asked, like, basically, do you think this is just like showing the trends of how people draft? Which, to an extent, I think it does. But I do think it gives more than that. So, I mean, for example, I didn't have the chance to do it before, but I was thinking about, you know, for closers, for example, you know, if a certain percent of league winners have at least one closer, well, how many closers are going inside the top five rounds? And then you can kind of do that math. So how many teams could possibly have one closer based on the ADP? And then if the number of league winning, teams has drafted a closer is higher than that percentage, then you can discern that there's at least some advantage in doing that. So that's like one example that I was thinking about. I think I'm trying to pull up the exact numbers again here. Closers I think are a major thing that has been on the rise. You can see, particularly in 15 teams, that number is rising, where there's at least one closer being taken. And I mean, that was, I know that was a main, I think it was Ron who led off with that in the last year's forecaster, if I have that correct, talking about how saves have been distributed. So, I mean, I think that lines up with a lot of the information that we kind of have in the community as a whole. So that's one example.
Yeah, it's wild. So, just real quick, just to like, I want to make sure to what you were saying too, Dan, about like, this isn't win rate. This is the percentage of winning teams that had this roster build. So like, because I've got the numbers in front of me with the closers, the number of 15. So in the main event, the number of league winning teams that drafted a reliever in the first five rounds was 21% in 2018, 13% in 2019. And this really stuck out to me. And I'm glad we did the 2022 update at the end of this. In 2021, that number jumped to 40%. And then last year it was 51%. So if I'm understanding it right, 51%, basically half the league winners in the main event last year drafted a closer in the first five rounds. Is that the right way to take that data?
Right. Yep. Yeah. And then basically what I was trying to say, I don't know if I articulated it very well, but basically what I was trying to say is then if you go back and look at the ADP, basically if there were less than, I mean, that's kind of a tough number with 15 teams, but basically if there were less than seven closers taken in what would be the top, 75, then you could say that there was some type of advantage in doing that, that you're gaining, you know, some type of advantage. So then that could be a way that you could kind of take the base research that I've done and then try to kind of take your strategy to that next level. So yeah, I think some of it is trends, which is why the win rate, taking that next step in the data would be useful to get even more information. But I do think you can go back and kind of cross check in that kind of way to kind of figure out where the true advantages are.
It's pretty wild to me looking at some of these numbers here for each kind of option. I guess there's, you know, you said closer, starting pitchers, but one that really stood out to me is stolen bases, because everyone puts such a premium on like, hey, we got to get like X amount of stolen bases early, we got to do this, that, and the other. But when you look at these numbers for just overall league winners, in theory, the number keeps dropping each year from league winners. And that, I guarantee, if you didn't show this graph to anybody and you just put like a poll out on Twitter, everyone would be like, no, there's no way. There's no, like, you guys are, no, there's, because everyone emphasizes it so much. So then, like, you know, last year, Vlad Guerrero, nope, can't draft in the first round, not viable, not possible, so on and so forth. So that makes it really interesting seeing those numbers in person there. And just the numbers, you don't get all the details behind it, just the numbers shows a lot. Was there anything else that stood out to you kind of like that? Because that stood out to me real quickly. Because, like, pocket aces makes sense because you need two guys to stay healthy the entire go. That makes a lot of sense. But still, one starting pitcher, ace, did very well. So on and so forth. But still, to me, to see the constant decrease in the stolen bases kind of stood out to me a little more, that maybe we are emphasizing catchers and pitchers early on so that you can go get your steals later. Maybe that's the theory behind it, or that it's just not as viable because the stolen base, I guess, world landscape has changed so much.
Yeah. I think one thing that is interesting is I think catcher is an interesting case. I've always been very resistant to drafting a catcher early. I think this data did kind of open my eyes, certainly to the benefit. I still think there's a lot of drawbacks to it, potentially. But the idea, like if you hit on a JT Realmuto from this year or something, that gives you a massive advantage. And I think the numbers do kind of, when I was looking through that, it was almost entirely like when I did the numbers this year, that's freshest in my mind. It was entirely pretty much JT Realmuto in there. So it's just kind of like when you get that right, it really did kind of anecdotally, it seemed to be a big advantage. I think there is the drawback because, I mean, if things go wrong with the catcher, they could go terribly wrong, arguably more than with, you know, maybe not starting pitcher, but with any other hitting position, I would say it could go worse. So that was an interesting one. And I think the other was just kind of the general structure, not any of the specific strategies, but still just that, yeah, hitting is still, generally speaking, the way to go, and then kind of finding the right ways to patch in the pitching within that is kind of what I took away. From that, is still, you still want to focus on getting, it seems like, a core of counting stats and from your hitters in those first five rounds.
Yeah, one of the things that really stood out to me, and this is for people following along in the book, but Dan's essay is page 74 and 75.
What a professional right there. See, look at this guy.
I would like we did on the last one. I pulled the book out and show it, but we don't have the book yet. But on page 74, this is one, and this kind of builds on what Dan was just talking about. The most common, so despite all the talk about aces going early and relievers going early in the first five rounds, in 12-team leagues, the most common roster structure through the first five rounds among league winners in the online championship was four hitters and one starting pitcher.
Yeah.
And that was in 2022. That was the first time, at least in the last 4 years that you've been doing this, collecting this data, Dan, is that's the first time that's happened. Previously, it was three hitters and two starting pitchers. Yeah. Last season, it was four hitters and one starting pitcher. The margin wasn't like terribly huge, but it was just really interesting to me how that was the most common roster build through five rounds. And it kind of does show that counting stats and hitting kind of still is king, at least in those 12 teamers. That really stood out to me.
Yeah, the difference between 12s and 15s is pretty impressive. Sorry, I'll give you the floor again, but just seeing, like, because on some of the different ones, the differences in the 12s and the 15s, that sometimes you think there's more depths in 12s, so you wouldn't be as serious to take a guy early. Maybe it's almost like it emphasizes it more, like, hey, go get this guy because the replacement value, you guys can add stuff up. So that stood out quite a bit too. But sorry, Dan, what were you going to say?
No, I think that is interesting. You have, in a way, you almost have less margin for error because that, yeah, because you need higher quality players in a 12-team league to fill every position. So yeah, I was just going to go to something Ryan had said in his comments. Is just, I do think it's interesting. I think maybe one thing that I would take away from those builds that are four hitter, one starting pitcher is also the power of having, if you really hit on that ace, the power of having it, which Bubba, I know you started with when you were kind of introducing the topic, you had brought that up. And I think, you know, your comments combined also kind of showing the numbers that, yeah, if you hit on that one guy who is, you know, gives you the excellent ratios, who stays healthy, who gives you the innings, gives you the strikeouts, there is real power in that, and that you can do it. If you hit on that guy, you can surround him with a lot of good hitters, and that is a winning formula that you don't have to go crazy on arms trying to get, you know, every, you know, strikeout guy early. I thought that was interesting, you know, combined with your two comments.
And that's why I know Toby loves Pocket Aces, because it took a long time for me to – I've done podcasting for years with him. So it took a while to rub off on me, but it made sense, because if you draft two, obviously, common sense math here, if one gets hurt, you still have one. So it's and if you have two that stay healthy long enough, that combined ratios and strikeouts, like, it allows you to have so much more flexibility with the rest of your pitching staff and so many other things. So it's kind of a double whammy, and the gentleman we'll have on next who will be on, he's a proponent of a lot of these philosophies as well, so he might be able to elaborate on this. But it is an interesting thing. And the one other thing before I give you the floor back, I think Ryan wanted to say something. Looking at the 2022 numbers, we said the first, you know, the hitters, pitchers, like 4-1 roughly. But that was also the first year where, like, the second-best philosophy and even the third-best strategy, I guess, relief pitchers creeped into the mess for both of them.
Yeah.
And so that emphasizes, again, like we started out talking about, you know, drafting one relief pitcher in the first five rounds, potentially being a 51% league win possibility. It shows just the strategies in general. Drafting one early, it's proven, if you combine, like, was it almost 40%, 35-40% for the second and third most popular strategy, have a relief pitcher, let alone, we talked about 51% at the beginning in 12-teamers. It goes to say, I think it was Rob Silver, Ryan, at FPAS, he had a big talk on basically saying, if you break it down and break it down and break it down, there's really only like 12 quality relievers in all of baseball, and we're playing with how many teams? So it really emphasizes that deal. So sorry, you guys want to say something?
I was just going to say, so one thing that came up while I was looking at it, page 75, we were talking about pocket aces, Bubba. This really stood out to me. 15 teams, so main event winners in 2019 and 2021, essentially one out of every five main event winning team went pocket aces. Yep. In those 2 years, that number was like 20% roughly. That number went down to 6% last year. That's pretty crazy. Huge. To me. I don't know if that means pocket aces is no longer in vogue, or if those pocket aces, maybe like Walker Buehler, was one of the more popular, kind of going at the back end of the first round, early second round, that back end wheel. Maybe if Walker Buehler was one of your pocket aces, you obviously probably weren't winning your league. But it was interesting to see that 21% rate for pocket A's drop down to 6% in 2022. So I'm definitely and just to give the listeners a little peek behind the curtain here, I'm glad, Dan, that you went through that all that extra effort to get the 2022 data on here. So we originally, and like what Dan was saying, this was originally done on the HQ site. We didn't have the 2022 data. NFBC didn't roll their site over to 23 until what, like right after the World Series. So it was a sprint. And I know, Dan, you're on East Coast time. You were sending me some late emails trying to get 2022 data in there, but I'm glad you did. It was really cool to get that added data point. So thank you, man. I know you've got a newborn, so you're probably up anyway, but still.
I was still off of my day job at that point too, so I had some little bit of extra time. Once she was down, I had some extra time to dig into the forecaster. I think just to add to your comment about the two pocket aces, I would be careful drawing too hard of a conclusion that pocket aces doesn't work, just because I think Giolito might have been another guy who might have fit into that conversation along with Buehler. So, you know, I think that's another thing, is like, no matter what, pretty much, even if we did get to the win rate, you know, portion, and we got to that at some point in time and it showed that there was an advantage, I mean, it still comes down to, you got to have the right players. You can't just, you know, and I think the other thing that's interesting too, though, is that in some ways it might be counterintuitive. Like, as the strategy becomes more popular, it might work less. So for example, if everyone went pocket aces, that's not going to work, because by the time you get to the 30th starting pitcher, I mean, not literally, but say, you know, eight teams do, the 16th starting pitcher, you know, that's probably not someone you want to be taking. you know, within the first two rounds of a 30-team league. So I think kind of counterintuitively, as strategies become more popular, you might start to see them less among league winners. So that's also another kind of potential way to try to use the data, is almost reverse psychology.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, you could almost, it's like the whole gambling or statistical method. Hey, it worked for over 20% for two straight years. It wasn't great this last year. Now the draft strategies of some might change. Let's go back to it. Get value in it. So 100% there. This conversation has been awesome, man. And I told you, like, we're on like a schedule here, so I don't want to like keep going. And I want people to read the book, obviously. So we're going to cut that off there. But I do have another question for you beforehand, because that was a lot of really great stuff, and I want people to go check that out. But you also did boxes, player boxes in the book. Yeah. And I don't know if this is too off the wall for you to be here, but one thing that we like to ask Corbin and Jock the other night is, and I'm going to ask you the same question, what player box did you write that surprised you the most, good or bad? Like, hey, this guy was really good, I didn't know it, or he's really bad, I didn't know it. Like, it happens to everybody. Anybody that writes any preseason content, you go, I did not know that. Yeah, it doesn't matter how much baseball you watch. So what was the player for you?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I have answers. It's not because it's too off the wall. It's just I got to narrow it down.
you can throw a couple quick ones out there. Go for it.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick one, it would be Nelson Velasquez from the Cubs. I followed him from Playing Time Tomorrow, but when I actually dug into numbers, I wanted to put an upside tag on him. I don't think there was enough data, I think, was the verdict on that, which is fair. There's not, but just you can see the power speed potential. You look at those numbers and it is just comes right out. I have it pulled up if I can get to it quickly enough. The XPX 144, there is minor league equivalent data in there, but XPX 144, SPD 151, 25% stolen base opportunity percent. So I mean, there's those numbers, just like, it could come with a terrible batting average, and it might, I'm going to watch the Cubs carefully this offseason, what they do, because I think they're trying to take a step forward in competitiveness. But if they don't add to their outfield, that was a guy that I was just like, wow, I was intrigued by him just from following him from PT tomorrow, but that jumped off the page. So that was probably, if I was narrowing it down to one, that would probably be the guy. And I'm hoping, I'm not quite ready to jump into draft and holds just yet, but he'd be
come on, the water's warm. The water's warm. Come on.
That's someone I definitely would would be trying to target. I don't know how late in drafts. I haven't even looked at ADP, if I'm being honest. So
don't blame you. Enjoy your time. Like you said, Ryan said, you had a newborn. Congratulations. Thank you. Enjoy that. The book's done. So relax a little there. And, you know, baseball's going to be here before you know it. So take a breather. Enjoy the holidays or whatever. But Dan, I thank you for joining us. This has been awesome. I think we're going to have to, like, get you on again, and we'll talk for a while on some stuff, because that was a – I think we could have made that happen for a lot longer. So I really appreciate you joining us. Ryan, anything final for Dan before we head on out?
No, appreciate it, man. Great job with the essay, with the boxes. And yes, Nelson Velazquez, that is a box that absolutely writing that jumps down off right the page.
Yeah, it surprised me. So yeah, thanks for having me. It was great. It was a blast.
Everybody check him out on Twitter @_DanMarcus. Dan, thanks for joining us, man. We will catch you some other time.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yep.
713 ADP on Nelson Velazquez. So
that's wild. I literally wrote his name down because I'm in round 10 of a 50. So that's going to be on my radar. So no one that listens to this better pay attention. Gialdi, you're in that league. Stop. But we're going to keep this train rolling, Ryan. And we have a special guest joining us here. He is the king of pretty much all formats. Now, when I first met him, he was the king of draft champions formats. But my goodness, when it comes to main events, when it comes to all, it doesn't matter. If it's fantasy baseball, this guy can do it. He gave a couple great presentations at FPEZ, and he wrote two awesome articles in the HQ forecast that we're going to talk about here. One is the value of volume, which is something I've tried to learn each and every year since talking to this gentleman, and it's so true, but I don't have the big brain like he does to figure this out. And then the reliability of ratio protecting relievers, another great, great topic. You find him on Twitter @SteveWymer, Y-M-E-R. Don't laugh now, but I have a joke behind the scenes about that one. But Steve, how you doing, my friend?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for joining us. Really looking forward to chatting with you again.
Yeah, it'll be my pleasure, I expect.
Ryan, anything for Steve before we get this party started?
No, just we figured out you learned how to spell with Steve's Twitter handle. With why the Y is.
Okay, so apparently we're going to talk about it on the scene instead of
behind the scenes. I can't let you off the hook.
So I've had Steve on my show. I've talked to Steve before, and I've written down things, but I'm a learner by writing, not by listening. And so I was writing down his Twitter handle, and I'm like, oh, that's why it's spelled that way. I'm an idiot. So, yep. Smart guy right here. But that's why I'm just here to host the show. The smart guys I talk to. That's how this game works. Steve, let's just kick it off here because we want to talk about both of these. And I told Ryan beforehand we could talk to you for like an entire show on these, I know. So we're going to kind of just go cliff notes and people read the book. And the first one is the value of volume. And this is something I know you and many others have talked about for quite a while, is volume as in plate appearances, playing time essentially, just like so on innings pitch, so on and so forth, because it just – I'll let you tell us why. What is it about the value of volume that you are trying to get across in this essay?
Yeah, so I noticed, like, I at the end of the season, I keep records of all my teams and their stats and so forth, and including, like, at bats, which is what NFBC reports. You can't actually get plate appearances. And I noticed that my teams tended to do better when they had more bats. So I just wanted to test that kind of across the entire pool, not just looking at my teams. And it was, at least on the hitting side, about what I expected, that, you know, the bats is a big driver of success. I think more so in draft and holds, but also in the fab leagues that I looked at.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed. And that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, make sure that's correct. Yeah, that's right. Especially in draft and hold.
Yeah, it was. Because, yeah, in the essay, you broke it out. You did draft and hold, and I think you did main and OCs as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I was, too surprised. Like, this is – I would have been shocked and, I don't know, would have had to question myself and my strategy if it didn't turn out that way, because that's, like, been a big emphasis of mine is always just to get the boring veterans that play, especially on the hitting side. But the correlations were probably even stronger, like, than I expected. The way that I did it was look at how much each hitting statistic correlates with total hitting points. So if you add a team's hitting – added up a team's points in the five hitting categories, so runs, homers, RBIs, steals, and average, what correlates most strongly with that? And the most strong correlations are runs and RBIs. That kind of makes sense. They're connected to one another, and they are categories. Like, they're directly in that total of total hitting points, right? Runs is one of the categories, RBIs is another. But then the next kind of level of correlation is home runs and at-bats, right? So actually at-bats is more strongly correlated with total hitting points than two of the categories. Right, so average and stolen bases, which is kind of telling, right? Because part of the stolen bases and average points are, part of what we're adding up in the thing that we're targeting, the total hitting points. So this isn't like a great lesson, but just other things being equal, you're more likely to do better and have more hitting points by just drafting hitters based on projected at bats than projected steals or projected average, right? And the reason for this is obvious. The other three categories, runs, homers, RBIs, are themselves really tightly correlated with at-bats. So if you're just aiming at at-bats, you're very likely to get indirectly a lot of runs, homers, and RBIs. So
one of the things that stood out to me was kind of that plateau, the correlation between with runs, basically the counting stats, runs, RBI, and homers with at-bats. But that did, like you said, drop off, not drop off a cliff, but stolen bases and batting average were far less correlated. Are you, in terms of like a general draft strategy in the earlier rounds, if you think you can, and you obviously you can, given your success in compiling at-bats, are you more willing or more targeting batting average and stolen bases early in your drafts because you cannot kind of stream the rest of those other three categories throughout the wire all season?
Yeah, I do that. And I haven't checked the results yet, but I did it in the past kind of just informally. Like, I know if I've used a hitter as kind of a compiler, they're less valuable to me, like based on how I play, than the numbers might suggest, right? I don't need all those runs at RBIs that they're getting by way of volume because I'm going to get those later. So I would focus more on average and stolen bases. This past year, I used a more sophisticated spreadsheet, and it's still not very sophisticated, but like I just weighted the categories differently and just took a bunch of the weight off of runs and RBIs so that when I'm calculating the value of a hitter, right, whatever the SGP from runs is, I've weighted it like 0.8 or something like that and shifted that weight or that value to other categories. And I think it worked a little bit, like by just kind of doing formally what I was before doing very imperfectly, probably just like roughly, this is an average guy, this is a compiler guy. So hopefully it worked. I haven't actually checked to see if my categories were more balanced than in the past. But that was the idea behind that.
Makes sense. Interesting. No, it's always really interesting seeing you break it down like that, because it makes sense at bats, like you said, the correlations of runs, RBIs, and power, but you're not correlating the average and stolen bases. But we just got to talking to Dan where, stolen bases might not be as important draft-wise in early rounds as it was before. So then that's what's fun about all this, is kind of trying to piece it all together. It's the puzzle that is a fantasy baseball team. So I bet if they combined the at-bats with the stolen base guys up early, that would probably change the spectrum a bit instead of looking at the specific things. But I digress. That's a whole different topic. When it comes to these deals, either 21 and 22, so there's kind of trends sort of that you could see. What kind of – did you see any trends, or is it just the consistent, hey, if I pound these categories, I'm going to do very well? Or were there certain categories they're like, it correlated, but not as much as, year to year, where it's kind of a little more not as fluid, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. So both for homers and stolen bases, the correlation with at bats this year of 2022 was less strong than for 2021. And there wasn't like space in the forecaster to go into that. But that's kind of interesting. Overall, the correlations are still pretty strong between like hitting points and at bats. But for home runs and stolen bases specifically, they were lower, especially in the 15-team leagues. And I think that makes sense. Like, for home runs, I get that. I understand, right? Like, changes to the ball, the humidor, like, home runs were more dependent on actually, I think, like, having raw power than in previous years, where anyone who's playing full-time could just volume their way to, like, 15 homers. And that was less true this year. So the correlation between at-bats and home runs wasn't quite as strong. For steals, I'm not sure why that is. I wonder if it's just, like, the overall averages are thrown off by a few players with like really high stolen base to at bat ratios, like Birdie, McCarthy got a whole bunch of steals that playing a lot. McCarthy came up and stole so many. I don't know, like, if they're, you know, if a few players like that will have a big enough effect to explain like the league wide ratio. But that's the only thing I could think of on why the stolen bases were less strongly correlated with at bats this past season.
Real quick, and Ryan, I'll give you the floor in a minute here. Did you find anything that correlated between, like, was the 12 more successful than the 15 versus the DC? Like, I know it's kind of on the charts there. Was there anything you saw where at-bats were even more important? I would assume the 15s. I could be completely wrong just because of the depth of the league. But did you see, like, was there leeway, I guess, in certain formats that if you didn't nail at-bats, you're still kind of okay, or you had to nail at-bats in another format?
Really, it was just the draft and holds, I think. And that was even more so in 2021, but there's a difference there. And that makes sense. Right? In Fab Leagues, between the 12 and the 15 is actually really similar, the level of the importance of the bats. And I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head, but presumably, like, if teams are active there, you can get a similar supply. You might be able to get more at-bats in a 12 off the waiver wire than a 15, but you can kind of fill in the holes, whereas in a draft and hold, right, if you lose players, then you're hitting points are going to suffer as a result, right? Alongside with those at-bats.
I wonder what, with the Gladiator coming out this year, I wonder what that correlation with at-bats is going to be next year. I would think extremely high with no bench and no fab moves.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm curious, like, on the pitching side. In general, like, on the article that I did, volume in pitching isn't nearly as important. The correlation isn't that strong between the number of innings pitched a team has and their total pitching points, so adding up the points in the five pitching categories. But especially like in the Gladiator, I think that's going to be pretty weak. Like, a lot of people are focused on like avoiding, like, getting the volume, like it's avoiding injury prone people on the pitching side as well. And making sure that you don't draft rookies and so forth. But I don't know. Like, I think everyone's still trying to figure out the Gladiator format. By the time we start to, like, get some theories, I think it's going to be shut down. but, like, my inclination is more, like, just to go for the low quantity, good quality, right? So, like, I don't care if they're injury-prone, like Andrahini or whatever. If I get those good ratios, hopefully he gets enough innings that I can do well in the other categories. But what I want to avoid is those high volume, bad ratio guys. Like, sorry,
Eduardo Rodriguez, Trevor Rodgers.
For you two guys.
Yep, yes, for both of us. It's fair. I appreciate it. I felt like Jack Toby reminds me of that all the time. Yeah, I know.
Well, I guess, you know, I should, less cruelly and probably even more extreme. Like, I imagine Barrios should probably be the
Yeah. Yeah, Giolito.
Giolito came up. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just me, like, kind of spitballing. No one really knows what to do in the Gladiator drafts, I think.
It's fun watching those Gladiator drafts for sure and see that one play out. But I like your comment there, because it's one thing Ryan and I talked about on our starting pitching review is, you know, Julio Urias is a guy you're talking about quantity and quality over quantity, basically. Yeah. He doesn't put all the innings in like you'd expect from a quote-unquote ace. But what he puts out there is elite, like elite, the wins, the ratios, like it's amazing what he can do. And I think we all have kind of a fog sometimes of early round pitching. We need this guy that's going to be a workhorse. He's going to do all these things. And Urias isn't that guy, but he does everything else because he's just on a workhorse. And I think that could be a great way to look at regular season, the full season roto, like with Fab Leagues plus the Gladiator idea of, you know, like you said, take the quality over the quantity sometimes. It's like the old joke with Kershaw. You know, you might only get 120 to 140 innings, but those are gonna be amazing innings. So, like, do you go that direction? So it's interesting.
One last thing I wanted to ask. I know we have another essay to talk about. Is so, like, one thing that I'm seeing, just chatter and Twitter and stuff, is you know, maximizing plate appearances is almost becoming, is just my opinion, almost becoming a buzzword, almost becoming groupthink. in terms of the industry because of research like this, where it does show that counting stats correlate, you know, very well with at bats and that sort of thing. My question is, like, do you think there it's gotten to the point, or we'll get to the point, where you need to pivot from that to kind of cut against the grain? Or is it kind of an easier said than done kind of thing to maximize plate appearances, and it's a effort and work thing to actually do it throughout the season?
So I think it is easier said than done. It's effort, work, and luck. I think you're right that people are catching on more. Like, it's been talked about enough that there's less value in those players that are just going to get playing time. Right. And a lot of them, like, are getting drafted ahead of the rookies that never play. Whereas a few years ago, like, people were really happy, you know, dreaming on the rookies, and they draft a whole bunch of them, especially like the draft and holds, and then they never come up. Right. I think that's less true. And I don't know if it's entirely for that reason or not, but I do know that in draft champions in 2022, the average team had more at bats than 2021 by like 60 or 80, but like enough that it, like, you know, there's a difference there. So whether that was just luck or, the NLDH is a big part of it. I think there is focus on that. Like, my teams had fewer at bats on average in 2022 than 2021. And I'm going to attribute that might partly be bad drafting, but like, it's not lack of effort. Like, I'm really careful about my lineups and so forth. It's at least partly like luck, right? That you draft people on a bunch of teams, they get injured, or like, to me, like, just anecdotally, it felt like all my hitters that got injured, it was on like a Monday, right? Like, after lineups had locked, and then you miss them for a while. So I do think that, like, there's a, like, it's a battle, like, there is luck, but you still have to maximize within, like, what's available to you, the at-bats that, that you can get, and draft knowing that those injuries are going to happen, right? So have, like, redundancies upon redundancies, when you're filling out, especially for those draft and hold rosters.
Yeah, and being able to talk. I mean, I know Bubba and I have talked about when we did our kind of, when we took our L's and did our lessons learned for this year. I know one of my things was, like, literally block off my calendar at 4 p.m. Pacific time, Mondays and Fridays, and really, I mean, watch who's in lineups, who's not in lineups. That is the kind of effort where, like, if you miss that someone's not in your lineup on a Monday, misses Monday, Tuesday, that stuff adds up. And, you know, some of that, like you said, Steve, might be luck, but some of it is, you know, planning for that, having those redundancies and really watching those lineups like a hawk twice a week. Yep. Something I know I need to get better at, even though it's so easy to say, oh, I'm going to maximize my plate appearances this year. Actually going out and executing that, I think, is takes some effort and willpower for sure.
Yeah, I remember Steve's topics at FPAS with Potts and Vlad, and Steve goes into his whole process of when he sets lineups and does this and that. I remember walking out with a couple guys going, I'm never going to be good at this game. I don't have
I'm
that
not
time.
Win.
I need to do one thing apparently, because there's no way I can do this. But it makes sense. Like, it makes tons of sense. But yeah,
I mean, it's obviously, it helps anyone, like, to not leave an injured player or like in your roster, but also, like, the way that I draft, like, I need that more than others, I guess. Like, I don't hit on breakout people as much as other people. I don't have, like, player evaluation skills and stuff like that. So someone who can, like, do a great job of seeing the breakout pitchers coming and so forth, it'll be probably a little less important for them. But like, I know this is how I play. So this is how I'm going to draft, where I'm going to try to, like, get the pitching early, and then I'm going to have to get the volume on hitting if I'm going to kind of make up for the fact that I didn't draft the top hitters.
All right, let's pivot here to the second essay from Steve, because he's got a lot of great stuff. I highly recommend checking out any work he does anywhere, podcast or written, because it's very good. And real quick, how many leagues have you done so far, Steve? Like, what, 12, 13?
I just this afternoon started what I think is my fifth DC, fourth or fifth. And I've done just one Gladiator so far. I'm doing another one of those tonight, actually.
So we're at the pick Steve's brain another month or so and talk about diversification. I've talked to Steve about it before. It's very interesting because he does spread out his profile, but also keeps a core at time. Like, it's really fun talking to Steve. But to the topic at hand here, reliability of ratio, protecting relievers. And I'm so glad you wrote this, because I can yell into a microphone until I'm blue in the face. People go, that's just that guy. You wrote about it, though. So it makes a lot of sense, because I've been, like, on this train for Give me guys that are going to be quality innings and might not be giving me saves. You never know what's going to happen. For someone like yourself that plays DC so much, it makes a ton of sense. It's called speculating on closers, but in a different format, different way of doing it. But even in fab leagues, like, go take this guy that might get two or three relief appearances and not crush you compared to some bad streamer somewhere. And those are the little things that add up. So what did you kind of, what was the big points you got across here in this article about reliability of ratio protected relievers?
Yeah. So kind of the way I came at it was like, you hear people say in draft season, like, don't pay for last year's great middle reliever, find this year's, right? So I was looking at like how to do that and how reliably, like, is that as easy as people make it out to be? So the way that I interpreted it was like to look at second half value using like SGP form. This way, how much a pitcher contributed in each of the five categories in the second half, and then which first half statistics best predicted that from, I think it was 2019, 2021, and 2022. And the results, again, like, I don't think were particularly surprising. Hopefully there's value in like confirming things that are commonly held, but like, especially for like baseball HQ readers, like, it wouldn't be surprising that it's like K minus walk percentage, right? And then swinging strike and ball percentage are like the big ones. That if you find relievers who meet certain thresholds in those categories in the first half, it's not a guarantee, but it's a pretty good chance that they will be valuable for your ratios in the second half. And the value is like pretty small. I think on average it was like a point in total between ERA and WHIP. But like, the title is like ratio protecting relievers. Like, you just want to not blow up and hold steady with those. And then also they get additional value from strikeouts and hopefully some wins and saves. You really want to make sure that you're not throwing, if your goal is to make sure you're not using those really dangerous streamers and still want to get some value, this is one way to find the relievers who will do that. So to look at those kind of indicators from the first half.
Yeah, no, do you prefer to use this as an, okay, you might have just said it, I totally just skipped past it, but as an in-season tool per se, or is this something you would rather use for your draft champions leagues as you prep for 2023?
It kind of it was meant in season, because I just, you know, that's when I did the work, was looking at, okay, who should we be rostering or chasing in the second half of this past season. But I use the same kind of framework for draft champions. Like, if I'm looking at reliever skills in, you know, the round 30s and 40s and so forth of the draft champion, I'm probably going to look more second half than full season. And I think there's just so much volatility in relievers. So yeah, it would be the same, you know, kind of framework that we're just looking at this last chunk of few months and using that to try to predict. And I haven't checked this. It might be less strong of a correlation if you look at like second half of this year projecting first half of next year, right? Because more can change in the interim in terms of pitch mix and injuries and so forth. But I imagine that the best predictors, even if they have a lower degree of success than in season, but still the best predictors would probably be strikeout minus walk rate. And like, this isn't groundbreaking, but also like swinging strike rate, especially for leavers and so forth.
I mean, sometimes like
a great speculator go ahead, brother. It seems like a great speculator column, Ryan. Go for it.
No, it's just, I mean, even though something like confirms what you thought, I mean, that still is valuable, especially with pitcher stats, there's just so much out there. It is good to know, like, can we hone in on just two or three indicators and go from there? The other, and in this case, like, it was nice to see swinging strike and ball percentage, which I use all the time. I know Toby's used a lot as well. He really picked up on ball percentage that we put in the forecast for a few years ago. So it's just nice to kind of get that confirmation. The last thing that I thought was interesting with this is that you looked at Steve first and second half, because maybe this is just my teams and my experiences. I'm more looking at those middle relievers in the second half of the season. Injuries pile up throughout the year. My starters, you know, go to the tank, and I'm struggling to field a starting pitching staff more in the second half than I am in the first half. So it was nice to be able to look at that. And then, like, you kind of started off, Steve, like, there is that kind of narrative out there that relievers are extremely volatile. And then, I mean, from season to season, like, they certainly can be. I always, Chris Devensky is the guy who always comes to mind, who was just knockout for like a year and a half, and then just kind of went away. But to kind of put numbers behind this in season, I think is a pretty useful tool when you're not trying to pick up Zach Logue, for example, in the second half, like I was trying to do for Oakland last year, and instead just go get like Evan Phillips.
Yeah, smart. Steve, another question on this for you here, because we'll have a few more before we have to wrap this up, unfortunately. When you start to look, you're comparing first half to second half, and maybe you haven't done the research yet, because it's probably really minute, like specific stuff. But when do you think the window of looking at these, because reliever sample size is so small compared to other sample sizes. So when can you start seeing like a K to walk rates and swing and strike rates and be like, you know what, let's jump on this guy. Let's go get him. Or like, when do you maybe start feeling comfortable? Is it a month or two? Cause when we're talking first half, we're talking 3 to 4 months. When do you think it starts to like, cause it's such a small sample size.
Yeah. I'm bringing this up. So I'm just bringing up my notes on what other people have done in terms of stabilization rates and strikeout rate for pitchers is like, 70 plate appearances, I estimated at 17 innings pitched. Walk rate's about 40. So you're not going to get 40 innings pitched from a reliever in the first half. You're going to have to jump a little bit before that. It might be, and this is, I haven't really done the research, like you said, but you might want to focus more on those sub-indicators, right, that have pitches as their denominator, so swinging strike and ball rate. But probably those should start to be meaningful, you know, 15 innings or so. That might be, I guess, 2 months. But, you know, you if you don't have that confidence, you're still going to be making pickups and so forth. So even if you don't have, like, as much data as you'd like, what you have is still better than nothing, right? So you still go for the pitchers, even if it's, you know, 5 innings in, this pitcher has, you know, this reliever has, you know, a 40% strikeout rate and his velocity's up, then doesn't guarantee these are going to keep doing well, but, you know, it's better than having velocity down and a 10% strikeout rate. So, you know, you take your chances, I guess.
Most definitely. Ryan, I'll let you have the last question if you got one, then we're going to have to unfortunately let Steve go for the evening.
No, super, super interesting stuff. Thanks, Steve. There's so many more, like, so much more we could talk. I'm super interested in what Eno Saris does with Stuff Plus and how that works for relievers. I'd be interested to kind of put that to the test and a study like this and kind of compare that to, you know, our HQ sub indicators. There's just, yeah, so much we can go on, but super, super important stuff, super interesting stuff, Steve. And it's always good when you put those numbers to it and get those correlations and, you know, prove what you thought that has value. So thanks, man. Really good job with both of these and glad they are on the HQ website as well. Cause your HQ column had, you know, put, you know, the HQ column equivalent of this, you kind of published midseason and had some very interesting names that you added onto the list as well. We don't typically put names in the essays just because it's not really relevant to what it was last year. But yeah, great job with it, man.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Steve. We'll chat again sometime. Like I said, we could probably have talked about these for a long, long time, but we're on a schedule here. So everybody check out Steve on Twitter at Steve Weimer, Y-M-E-R. And Steve, thanks for joining us, man. We will do this again sometime.
All right. See you guys.
See ya. All righty, folks. We have one more guest joining us. And just for people, if you are watching this or you might hear it, Ryan's going to switch his platforms here in a minute. So you might lose him for a second, but he will pop back on.
I'll be back.
So don't worry about that.
In a noisier setting, most
yes,
likely.
Yes. There's a lot of back. Remember the start of the show? School is out, folks. But we have a special guest, a third guest joining us this evening to talk some more forecaster fun. And he wrote an awesome column on can you hack the waiver wire. And I don't know about you, Ryan, but the waiver wire is something that is the conundrum of conundrums. It seems like year in and year out. What fab? What do we do? What do we do? So we're going to talk to him. You can find him on Twitter at Huge Days. Gary James, how we doing, man? Oh, you're quiet. Check your mic. Oh, we're 3 for 3. We'll get him in a minute. We got you. Yeah, we got you.
I'm gonna switch while we're waiting.
Switch your stuff upstairs. We'll do the whole thing. It'll be fun. And then we'll get Kerry on here to talk about some waiver wire fun. Still quiet, Kerry. Still quiet. No. Ryan, go switch. We'll do this in just a second. It's technology. It's so much fun. I'm telling you. He can hear us. That's half the battle, folks. He can hear us. So we'll get his mic working in no time, and we'll rock and roll with segment three of this awesome show. A lot of great news. And like we told you guys, the forecasters got so much awesome stuff. And I led off the show talking about not just boxes, player boxes, but articles and essays. And that's what these guys are going to talk about today. So we'll get him on here in just a second. We'll get Bloom back up. We got Carrie back up. And I got Bloomfield in a new setting, folks. We're still waiting for Carrie.
I am back on. I've got plenty of background noise here. So
I like the painting. It's a different setting from the normal look. Oh, and the tree. So festive.
All right, do you have me now?
Oh, we got you. Carrie's with us. You did it. Perfect time. Perfect timing. Ryan's got his new setting. We got Carrie here at Huge Days on Twitter. How you doing, man? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I got here by the skin of my teeth. Got a couple.
Your tweet.
Yes. Just doing some juggling of my own. It's quiet here now, but the storm will soon arrive. So, you know, my family will return. Yes.
Yeah. We all have kids. Yours are a lot bigger, it sounds like, than ours, but we get it.
Yeah. My son's got a 98 percentile head size. So, you know.
Yep. Nice. How you credit my poor daughter's got my head, so she's in trouble. But, exactly. I get it. But, man, you wrote an awesome article on Can You Hack the Waiver Wire? So I'm going to give you the floor. What were the points? What did you accomplish by writing this? What are the readers actually going to accomplish by reading this, I should say?
Okay. So when I got the gig of like writing about strategy, like the gaming side of things, game theory, my first thought was, what can I do? My first thought was, what do? I think I just have to assume that everyone has all the information already. I don't know if you guys already do this, but a while ago, like I started doing fantasy baseball, I think in 2001 or two. So by now I figure everyone I'm in leagues with reads all the same waiver wire articles. They read all the same projections. They do all the same stuff that I do. So if we were to start from that point, if you start there and you think about it for a minute, you're like, well, how do I even get excited about the waiver wire now if I already know that everyone's sniping for the same person? What can I do to gain an advantage of that? And I mean, the very simple answer to that one is to simply know who's going to break out and when they do and pick them up before everyone else. Now,
simple game, man.
That is easier said than done, right? And I don't proclaim to have a silver bullet, but I do know that there are tools that you can use in whatever league and format you have to find little advantages. And it just depends. Like I play mostly in roto leagues, like year long. I don't do much daily. So one of the first things I usually do when I look at a player pool is I click on whatever. In Yahoo, they have the research assistant. They have like the pick, you know, who's trending, who you can pick up, who everyone else is picking up. And the first thing I usually do is just to, you know, get rid of all the pitchers from the pool because you know that starters are getting scooped up everywhere. And that's kind of where I started with my article. Oh, boy. Sorry, that was just a very important phone call that I just professionally muted. let me see. So the next thing I kind of do is just, oh man, they hit me real hard with that little momentum breaker. So basically what's important to me is I look at rates of pickup. And by that, I mean, you're not probably going to find the next guy if they're being picked up by everybody else at that time, right? If player, you know, let's say, let's just say it right out. Let's say Cody Bellinger somehow starts out really hot, right?
Somehow.
My, my arch nemesis, right? Mm-hmm. My great foe. everyone's going to be, as soon as he hits like three home runs in the first 2 weeks, there's going to be like 60 articles generated across different websites saying, now is the time. Like, this might be it. He might be back. You got to grab him. But I think the three of us and our listeners know that if you're having that conversation, he's probably picked up in leagues that don't have, he's already picked up by other people, right? It's usually first at the computer unless you're in a more humane league that does the, you know, fab, the daily or weekly fab, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess the idea would be, what do you do? If you know that Cody Bellinger's gone, what's the best way to find the guys who are going to break out? And the best way to do that I found was looking at the month-long trends and looking at the two-week-long trends. And that sounds pretty simple. It sounds like everyone else is probably doing it. But the reaction I got to the article was that not many people are actually using that tool. Most people have, have jobs, have lives. They depend on the waiver wire articles and they depend on outside influences to guide them. And, you know, lead them to victory or to shout and threaten them violently in DMs when they're wrong, right?
So true.
So my thought is, why don't we, you know, what can you do if we're all reliant on other people, which is, it's a wonderful giving industry of experts everywhere, right? And I don't proclaim to be one, but I like to think outside of everything, take a big step back and be like, what's something that's so like simple and stupid, but everyone's ignoring it? And that is the one that I've found has been most effective. It's how I snatch guys up, and then a week or 2 weeks later, they're in every article. And that is simply look at a month long, look at a 2 week long trend, and look for guys that aren't being picked up a lot. Then you just look at their schedule, see what's coming up, and you know. You just hit the ad and hope you get lucky with a $1 or $2 bid rather than, you know, talking to Jeff Zimmerman on his Sunday night chat saying, do I bid 85% of my entire budget on Cody Bellinger? Right? Like that.
So true, though. It's so true what you're saying. Yeah. I was a week or two late and here goes your whole budget. Yep.
No. And I mean, I don't know. I feel for those people and I am that person. I guess that's the fun part about writing these type of articles is I get to put myself in the head of like, I've been playing long enough where I remember, you know, sitting there and not clicking accept on a trade until I got three replies from experts via email or like on fantasybaseballcafe.com or was it .com, I think? Yeah.
That's a blast from the past. I used to be not heavy on there, but I used to go there all the time.
I wrote some articles on that thing. That was great. That was my first writing job. Yeah. And I got yelled at immediately and was like, what a choice this was to write. For free. I wrote a deep waiver wire article and was yelled at for not including more mains. You know, like, why didn't you write about this guy? And it's like, he's owned in 90% of the leagues. It's beautiful. All right.
Look in the first paragraph. It says deep ads.
And I learned to just bite my tongue.
Yep. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's kind of how I approach the hacking the waiver wire. It's a work in progress. I appreciate that it's in the book. I picked up this magazine, or it's more of a book, I should say, like every year. So it's kind of wacky to see my name in it. But yeah, it's an honor.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's good to see, though. It's good to see. And in the waiver wire, like I introduced to start out with, it's one of the biggest conundrums in the entire thing. It's, do I take a chance early, like you said, for a buck or two? Do I wait? Do I do this? Do I do that? Mm-hmm. And I'm with you. I do a lot of looking at, I guess, trends or 2 to 4 weeks trends, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. And it does help a ton. Still, it's so hard to, like, my hardest thing is dropping the right guy. That's the real fun part. And when to give up on the love of your life?
You've grown your third leg. You know that you're this play. You know the player that you know everyone said was going to go off for a month. They don't. You drop them, and they just they produce like a season and a half worth of offensive stats for somebody else. And it just, it's so crushing.
One of the things you put in there, Gary, not to cut you off, but it was one of the things that I was like totally nodding my head when you wrote this, was that pitchers are a totally different animal. In competitive leagues, you cannot wait for consecutive starts before nabbing starters who have made changes like tweaking a pitch mix. But one game is enough. Like I, and that's a literal pull from the essay. Like I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's, I think, what a lot of people are doing, but if not, they should be looking at, I've always kind of said pitchers can not reinvent themselves, but they can change pretty quick and kind of be aggressive with those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly of weight, you know, I played fast and loose with pitchers for the most part in the entire game. Like I wait on aces. I gamble. And then during the season, I hope to land, you know, it's a very reckless strategy. And it when it hits big.
That's your strider.
But I'm a good, pain is my best friend in terms of pitching. So like, it's just, you can't wait. They're just like, it's my least favorite part of the waiver wire is finding pitching. So that's why I start drafting pitchers late, but I just keep drafting them. And it annoys the heck out of the people I draft with. And that's the other thing. I think I didn't have space to put it in that article, but I wrote about it in general, just the idea that with the waiver wire, you psychologically just have to know who your opponents are. You have to know what their patterns are. You have to know that you're in this league with this guy that is going to make sure that the minute that a middle reliever starts warming up, like in the eighth, that they're going to be gone the next day, right? Like you have to know all this minutia, and it's like, you know, I've been in one league for decades, and that's helpful, right? Decades is a good sample size to learn people's behavior. When it comes to expert leagues or other public leagues, that's a totally different thing. But usually, like that's for me, that's about throwing out bait. Like, did you guys see that RotoWire article? Did you guys get behind the paywall at Baseball HQ? Did you read this? Did you like? And you can suss out some beautiful information. Like it's all there. And then you'll not, you know, that's when I can strike. Ooh, someone else is popular.
That's right. It's a giant game of chess is what it is.
It is. It's glorious.
Another question from your little essay there is, you mentioned rest of season projections, which I think is phenomenal. It's a great point. I know Steamer does rest of season projections. Some other sites do as well. I know HQ does. I'm not going to throw that one out here. And you don't have to be the company man here, but which ones do you like to use to kind of combine with, you know, 2 to 4 week trends, use some rest of season projection? Because they're all good in their own ways. That's why I like to mention them all. They all have validity to what they do. So what do you prefer to use?
And I'll just add to that question. I'll make the question harder for you too. Is like, so yes, there's all the sources. I also use Rasball does that not many other people have, is the weekly projections.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're awesome.
Some of the best in the game, period. Like there's no denying that.
Mm-hmm. Do you combine that with the rest of the season? How do you manage all of those things?
So when I first found FanGraphs, I became a lunatic. And I mean, I know what the ATC does, a kind of aggregate of 3 or 4 different systems, right? I was not the first person to do this, certainly, right? Like, but I aggregated everybody's progression, you know, projections. I created a giant monster spreadsheet. I looked to see, you know, I basically used projections early on in my career to kind of kill bias. And be like, you know, like, yes, I'm excited and think Javi Baez can go 40-40. But, like, is he really going to do that? Every system says he's not going to do that. You know, so right now, as of right now, I use Rasball, I use Baseball HQ, and I use, I think I use the bat. I can't remember which one on FanGraphs I use. I aggregate those three at the beginning of the season. After that, it's really dicey, I gotta say, because I don't know, like Yahoo has their own little system. They're like and I think I made this reference somewhere. I'm not sure if anyone got it. It's like, I don't know if you play Japanese role-playing video games, but they have this, it's all about hidden numbers. You don't, you know, you're attacking something, you don't actually know how many hit points it has left. With Yahoo, with their projections, I never know where the math is coming from, especially when it's rest of season. You'll have a guy that's, you'll have like Bellinger or other players that have just are massively, like, you know, they haven't got a hit in 30 days, but they're still somehow projected to hit 35 home runs. So I've stopped looking at those. In season, it's kind of, I'll lean on Razzball, and what I'll do is basically take the current season totals, and I will weigh that against the rest of the season to kind of create a fake, a false full season of statistics. It's not foolproof, but it feels a little bit better. And it's a better hedge when you use the trade analyzer function, which a bunch of different sites have, and they'll tell you, like, your trade is totally fair. And then you'll go on the next one, it'll say, no, you're getting hosed. And you're looking at the projection outputs, and they're just bizarre. And here's the thing. I don't know how to build those things. I'm a mere mortal. So I depend. I'm a leech on them. Don't take my criticism as scorn.
Trust me. I'm totally not smart with any of that stuff. So yeah, I just suck up where I can find it, and we go from there. 100% with you. And what I did enjoy sucking up was the content that you wrote there at Baseball HQ in the Forecaster Carry. So we are going to wrap it up there. As it's been an awesome time with you, and thanks for joining us, man. It's been great. Look forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, good luck, guys. I'll talk to you later.
Happy holidays. On Twitter at Huge Days, Ryan. This has been an absolute pleasure, my friend. We're going to wrap things up here as well. But hey, two successful HQ shows. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, this was awesome to do the player box, kind of trading war stories on Wednesday night, and then tonight going more essay wise. So I thought it was cool to kind of just talk to folks and give them the chance to talk a little bit more about their work. So we are going to have a live show in like 2 weeks, mid-December, that I'm going to host with
Brenton, Ray, and Ron. Ryan froze. I was answering for him. He's Brenton, Ray, and Ron, I'm pretty sure. So he'll get you filled in on that and much, much more. But we'll wrap things up there, as Ryan's got daddy duties to go take care of. It is a Friday afternoon for us, Friday evening for you at home if you're watching live. But it'll be we'll be back to you guys next week. Another episode of Bub in the Bloom. Will not be a Forecaster episode, I don't think. Who knows? It was a blast. We could have talked about this for a long time with these guys. But hope you guys enjoyed it. If you have any questions, let us know. We're going to get you ready for the 2023 season before you know it, as we're already into December, already in the draft season. But for now, everybody, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm Matt B. Dientrich. We'll catch you guys next time.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.